Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Monday, June the 27th. Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. In the next 25 minutes, the Nigerian army says its forces rescued about 5,000 civilians held hostage by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram.
This is a normal routine work that they have been doing in order to clear the remnants of Boko Haram's from wherever they are in the northeastern Nigeria.
In Somalia, Al-Shabaab gunmen attack a hotel frequented by politicians, killing dozens, including a government minister. These eyewitnesses tell harrowing tales of the attack.
There were armed soldiers everywhere, sirens, and people were in panic. There were lots of dead people.
It was extremely violent and there was panic. There were bodies everywhere.
There was a huge explosion which sent black, thick smoke into the sky. I heard a large bang. Then I heard people screaming behind me.
Plus another segment of our popular radio drama series, Learning by Air. So stay tuned.
Top story.
The Nigerian army said on Sunday that its forces have freed more than 5,000 civilians who were held hostage by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. The army said the hostages were freed during an operation over the weekend in the northeast of the country. The troops were supported by members of a grassroots security force and conducted raids in 15 villages, during which 6 Boko Haram terrorists were killed and several others wounded. Mohammed Alamin is DW correspondent in northeastern Nigeria and joins me now. Mohammed, you've been speaking to authorities about this operation. What have they been telling you?
Yes, I talked to Colonel Sani Usman Kuka Sheka, the army spokesperson. And what he is telling me, this is a normal routine work that they have been doing in order to clear the remnants of Boko Haram's from wherever they are in the northeastern Nigeria.
Alami, what do we know about these civilians that were rescued?
Most of them were children, women, and elderly persons. They are living in a place where Boko Haram's actually controlled earlier on. Boko Haram blocked them from going anywhere, so they held them hostage there.
You talked about a mopping up operation that is about to clear out the remnants of Boko Haram fighters in the Sambisa Forest. How extensive is this operation carried out by the Joint Multinational Task Force, which obviously Nigeria is leading?
Well, so far so good from what we are hearing from the people living in those areas. Most of the people I spoke to in Baga, which is one of the places that is in the border area between Nigeria, Chad and Niger, they are saying the military are doing actually well. They are clearing Boko Haram from wherever they are, and they are recording a lot of successes in that places.
The government did give an impression that Boko Haram has been defeated and decimated. How much of a presence do they still have around Sambisa?
Actually, there are a lot of places that Boko Haram still control in northeastern Nigeria, more especially in Borno State. There are local governments, maybe military are controlling half and Boko Haram are in control of the other half. And there are a lot of places in Sambisa. You know, Sambisa is a very large place that one cannot easily penetrate. So they still lives in Sambisa, far Sambisa, but the military are still going on with their own clearance.
Mohammed Alamin. In Somalia, at least 17 people were confirmed dead in an attack on Sunday carried out by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The attack began when a suicide bomber detonated a car laden with explosives at the entrance of the heavily fortified Nasser Hablood Hotel. The hotel is located at a busy junction in the heart of the capital, Mogadishu. 3 armed Al-Shabaab gunmen then stormed the hotel after the explosion and took people hostage. A government minister was also among the people killed. DW correspondent Mohammed Odowa has been speaking to some of the people that witnessed the attack, and they described a really harrowing picture of the scene.
It was a pretty crazy and scary situation. There were armed soldiers everywhere, sirens, and people in panic. There were lots of dead people. It was pretty horrific, to be honest. A woman was carried out by four men in their arms. She appeared to be dead. The explosions left enormous damage to nearby buildings.
It was terrifying. There was lots of screaming, lots of panic, lots of blood. There were many people, including women who had small businesses outside the hotel. I saw many bodies, including women, lying on the road. There are also people who are using the road at the time. Everyone I saw was running on his way to escape. Residents were turning home from work at the time of the blast.
I saw several cars destroyed by the first blast. It was extremely violent and there was panic. There were bodies everywhere. People began to drop and throw themselves to the ground. I thought my head had blown due to the scope of the explosion. People, including myself, kept running from the area.
I was working at a nearby petrol station opposite the hotel when the first blast went off. There was a huge explosion which sent black, thick smoke into the sky. I heard a large bang. Then I heard people screaming behind me. I saw several people falling all over the ground.
Eyewitnesses of Sunday's attack in Mogadishu speaking to DW's Mohamed Odowa.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, the African Union's Peace and Security Council has reiterated its call for urgent talks to solve Burundi's year-long political and security turmoil. This call was made over the weekend as representatives of the 15-member council concluded a four-day visit in the East African nation to inquire about the country's current situation. The crisis was caused by the controversial third term of President Pierre Nkurunziza. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niyirora sends this report.
In a press conference held at the end of the visit of the AU delegates in Burundi, the head of the delegation, Lazare Makayat Safwes, said the delegates met with various stakeholders, including the country's top authorities, the civil society, religious groups, the UN system, and diplomats. After a field visit in Makamba province, 200 kilometers south of the Burundian capital Bujumbura, where they met President Nkurunziza, they realized that security had improved, even though the situation needs to be improved. Here is Lazare Makayat Safwes, head of the African Union Peace and Security Council delegates.
I think that today's situation is different from that of after 25th April 2015. I think all the stakeholders that we met unanimously share this view. But of course, there are situations that need improvement.
Safwes indicated that an urgent and inclusive dialogue remains the solution to Burundi's crisis.
Evidently, dialogue is not held only with friends. We got the assessment from all sides up to the top level with legitimate authorities of this country. We met religious groups and all civil society groups, and we reached the conclusion from all stakeholders that there is a sentiment of urgency to hold talks and to act quickly. And acting quickly means getting together, discussing, and finding an agreement.
The African Union had planned to deploy 200 monitors, including 100 military experts and 100 human rights investigators, but scrapped the plans. Last month, the African Union also backed a suggestion by the UN Security Council to deploy an international police force after human rights experts issued a report that there were human rights violations in Burundi. Burundi's External Relations and International Cooperation Minister Alain Emenyamitwe, however, said the option of deploying the smallest number of police agents was adequate for the government.
With regards to the suggestion by the United Nations Security Council on an international police force to be deployed to Burundi, the government has analyzed the three options. Some suggested the deployment of 3,000 police agents, others 228 police agents, and others suggested between 30 and 50 police agents. We chose the third option.
Burundi is facing a political turmoil that broke out since April last year following President Nkurunziza's announcement that he would be seeking a third term.
Apollinaire Nyirora in Bujumbura. South Africa's President Jacob Zuma now faces real possibilities of fraud and corruption charges. This comes after a high court in Pretoria last week denied the president a right to appeal an earlier court ruling which stipulated that the corruption charges against the president should be reinstated. Subri Govender has more.
We believe it is in the interests of justice for this trial to continue and for Jacob Zuma to face the 783 charges in an open court. The advice of our counsel is that the charges are reinstated. The original judgment was very clear on that matter, that he should now face the charges that he was originally charged with.
This reaction by James Self, a leader of the Democratic Alliance opposition, appears to be the general feeling in South Africa that there are chances that the fraud charges against President Jacob Zuma will be reinstated sooner or later. Zuma is accused of 783 counts of fraud, corruption and racketeering. These charges are related to millions of rand that were paid to him by his former financial advisor Shabir Sheikh in return for political favors and government tenders. In the latest decision, Judge Aubrey Ledwaba ruled that the withdrawal of the charges in 2009 by the National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA, did not mean that Zuma should not face the charges in a court of law.
Such withdrawal does not nullify the decision to prosecute should Mr. Mche's decision be set aside. The said withdrawal cannot be regarded as a factor to stop Mr. Zuma to face the charges.
The decision against Zuma and the NPA has not come as a surprise, and legal expert Professor Pierre Defos says it seems that Zuma will eventually have to confront the charges in court. Defos, however, says that Zuma can still appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court.
There's not really a legal question that is open for an appeal. So in that case, it is not likely that the Supreme Court of Appeal will change its position from a previous time. So it was more likely to be successful to a petition directly the Constitutional Court because they haven't spoken on this issue yet.
Meanwhile, an atmosphere of fear and despair has gripped the capital city of Pretoria and surrounding areas. This after the country's police and allied security forces brought under control and contained a week of burning, looting and wide-scale destruction. A political analyst, Somadoda Fikeni, says the use of political violence by ANC members and the emergence of ethnicity have been increasing because there is no real leadership in the ruling ANC.
I do think that leadership has been so diminished that they do not have the same aura of a Nelson Mandela who takes on national television and who speaks and people take note. Ethnicity is back, not just by penny sparrow in racial lines, but in ethnic terms. The more resources diminish, the more the system is corrupted by patronage. People start associating that if so-and-so is from my tribe, if so-and-so is from my region.
The ANC leadership and its mayoral candidate, Toko Didiza, have strongly condemned the burning, looting and destruction in Pretoria and the surrounding areas. So far, 5 people have been killed, more than 200 others have been arrested and charged, and millions of rand damage caused to public transport, businesses and other infrastructure. While some semblance of normalcy has returned to the Pretoria townships, there's no doubt that factionalism and the struggle for power within the ANC continues to portray a negative picture about the country.
Subri Govender reporting. Now the story of thousands of Africans seeking to make the dangerous crossings over the Mediterranean to Europe in this week's Learning by Air. Enjoy and learn.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Learning by Ear. This is the third episode of our ongoing radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda had a challenging interview at the embassy, but luckily, she succeeded in getting a visa. She was surprised to learn that her father had already bought her plane ticket. She's due to leave this coming weekend. Her boyfriend, Chivasi, seemed to have come to terms with her departure. He spoke to her on the phone and accepted an invitation for supper with Linda and her parents. Meanwhile, on the North African coast, Farahani has come up with a plan to sneak into Europe undetected by border guards. And Sule has reluctantly agreed to join him on this adventure. So what's in store today? Sit down, relax, and enjoy today's episode called The Lucky and the Unlucky. It's dawn in North Africa, and the sun is slowly rising. Farahani and Sule are already up and preparing for their journey.
Sule, hurry up. Our contact is waiting in the car outside. We are late.
I can't find my money, Farahani. Huh? Have you seen my wallet? I can't pay for the car journey if I don't find my wallet.
Well, where did you put it? Hurry, Sule. You know that for these people, timing is everything.
I had it here somewhere, but now I can't find it. Farahani, please, will you pay for me? Once you get to Europe, I'll pay you back.
Sule, what do you take me for? A fool? I've been waiting for this day all my life, and here you are trying to ruin everything for me.
Farahani, come on. We are friends. We are more like brothers, really. Please, help me, eh? And in a few months, I'll pay you back your money.
Sule, I can't help you. The money I have is only just enough for me. The transport fee has gone up even for people who live near the coast. We are supposed to pay about 1,000 euros each. That's all I have. I'm sorry, brother. I'll have to leave you behind.
No, please, Farahani, please. Talk to the driver. He will understand.
Oh, don't worry, Sule. Just pray for a safe and successful journey for me and the others. Once we get to Europe and things work out over there, I will send for you. Goodbye, Sule, my friend. Bye.
Farahani, please, don't leave me.
Hey, wait for me. Hey, wait for me. Wait for me. Hey.
The sight of Farahani chasing after the pickup van full of migrants made Sule bust out laughing. But Farahani isn't just chasing a van. He's chasing his dream, his ticket to Europe. Will he catch up with them and proceed on his journey? Keep listening to find out. Later that day, on the other side of the continent, Chivasi is standing at the front door of the Maraga family house, an invited guest, to say farewell to Linda as she prepares to fly to Europe for her studies.
That must be Chivasi. The dog never liked him.
That dog is not the only one. Your mother doesn't like Chivasi either. I hope she doesn't hear me from the kitchen.
I know, Dad. Come on, let me open the door for him. Spotty, stop that. Stop it.
Excuse me. Is this the home of one Linda Maraga?
No, I'm sorry, young man. I think you must be lost.
You're right, young lady. I really am lost without her.
I think she's lost without you too. Come in. My parents are waiting.
Good evening, Mr. Maraga.
Aha, hello, Chivasi. Oh, come on in. Darling, we are all here.
Oh, hi, Chivasi. Okay, it's self-service now, so please help yourself.
Everything smells so good.
Chivasi, what are your plans?
Well, I don't really have a plan at the moment. I've only just finished university.
Jesus, don't you want to continue with your studies?
Can we talk about something else, please?
Sure, Mrs. Maraga. I'd love to. It's just that right now, it's just not possible for me. You know, my parents can't afford it, and my other brothers and sisters are still at school. So I need to get a job quickly to help support my parents and family.
Chivas is coming with us to the airport to see me off.
Oh, is he?
Oh, am I?
Oh, sure, why not? You're like family to us, Chivasi.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of you, Mr. Maraga.
And as soon as I finish my studies and come home, we intend to get married.
Chivasi almost choked when he heard those words, not to mention Linda's parents. But their surprise soon turned into joy. After a few days of anxiety and anticipation, the time came for Linda to leave. At the airport, she was surrounded by her parents, relatives, friends, classmates, and of course, Chivasi. But before we see her off, let's find out how Farahani is coping after missing his chance to migrate to Europe. He hasn't seen Sule since that day, but they're about to bump into each other in a cyber cafe.
Internet, please.
How long?
Half an hour.
Computer number 3, on the left. You have to pay first.
Farahani, is that you? I'm so sorry about...
No, not now, Sule. Let's talk when I've finished.
But you're not mad at me, are you?
No, I'm not. Everything happens for a reason. Maybe it just wasn't the right time.
That's true. I never thought of it in that way. Maybe I was acting as your guardian angel.
Okay, guardian angel. Wait here. I'll be right back.
Some people are lucky enough to be born in wealthy families or moderately well-off ones like Linda's. But some, like Chivasi, are not. And for others, like Farahani and Sule, life is even harder. One option is to go where life seems better. Farahani has wasted no time in setting up another trip. His contacts are human traffickers, people smugglers, who are willing to ferry anyone to Europe illegally for a prize. Meanwhile, Linda is sitting tightly buckled into her plane seat, feeling nervous. Next to her is Florence, a 30-something lady married to a European, who's flying back to Europe after visiting her family.
Welcome on board our flight number 7896. My name is Captain Smith. The plane is now ready for takeoff, so please fasten your seatbelts and bring your seats into an upright position. Cabin crew, please take your seats and get ready for takeoff.
Is this the first time you've flown?
Yes, this is my first time.
Oh, don't worry, you'll enjoy it. I'm Florence, by the way, but you can call me Flo.
Ah, hi. My name is Linda. Linda Maraga.
Pleasure to meet you, Linda. So I imagine you're going to see a boyfriend, maybe?
No. I just said goodbye to my boyfriend at the airport. I'm going to Europe to continue my studies.
Wow, that's wonderful. I mean, your study is not the boyfriend thing. I'm sure it must be hard for you both.
Yes, it is. But we're going to get married when I finish my studies.
And when exactly do you finish?
In 3 years' time. I'm studying international law.
3 years? Okay.
Florence?
Yep.
I know we've only just met, but may I say, I really like your dress. And your shoes and gold necklace are lovely, too.
Thank you, Linda. You know what? Mm-hmm. I like you. And because I like you, I'm going to give you my number. If you need anything, you know, if you just want to hang out with your own people, mm-hmm. you give me a call, okay?
Thank you very much, Flo. I really appreciate it.
Don't mention it. Enjoy the flight, Linda.
And as Linda's plane takes off into the African skies on its way to Europe, we end this third episode of our Learning by Ear series on migration from Africa to Europe. Linda seems to have warmed to Florence, but is this friendly woman really someone she can trust? What awaits Linda when she arrives in Europe? Back at home, how will Chivasi cope with his girlfriend's departure? In North Africa, what does Farahani plan to do after failing to make it with the rest of the illegal migrants? All this and more in our next episode. Join us in our online discussion at facebook.com/DW.LBE to discuss the emotional side of having to say goodbye to a family member, a person you love, or friends who have migrated. You can also listen to this episode and others in the series by visiting our homepage at dw.de/Destination Europe. Until next time, goodbye.
And before we leave you, a quick reminder of the main stories. The Nigerian army said on Sunday its forces freed more than 5,000 civilians who were held hostage by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. And in Somalia, at least 17 people were confirmed dead in an attack on Sunday carried out by the Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. A government minister was among those killed. That's all we had time for. To respond to any of these stories, send us either a text message to +491609575950, an email to feedback@dw.com, or a letter to Africa Link, DW53110 Bonn, Germany. I am Abubakar Jallo. Have a great week ahead. That's all we had time for. For more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn. Bye now.